keeping everything and to reuse. Now people are learning this skill again. So that sort of skill and knowledge is still alive in Turkey. So our people should be aware of what we are going to lose. In Western countries, we are trying to bring it back. But in my own country, I'm saying that this is valuable. This is the time to keep, to be aware of how to keep our own knowledge and skills.
Emet Degermenci is a social ecologist from Turkey who has researched women and ecology around the world. She spoke to Frieda Werden at Women's Worlds in 2011. Her best-known work in English is titled A Critique of the Limits of Growth from a Social Ecology Perspective. It can be found at academia.edu. To hear this and other WINGS programs again, visit WINGS at wings.org. WINGS thanks our supporters, including your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen and Genevieve Vaughn, whose events can be found through the website maternalgifteconomymovement.org. The WINGS sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle Is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Peace, this is MF Grimm. You're listening to KBOO Portland. This feels like home being here. Keep hip-hop alive.
So here we are at Films 11, and we are talking to Evan Wilson, who is going to talk about a movie that didn't really get that much positive press attention in the course of last year, but it is Francis Ford Coppola's Megalopolis.
Don't let the now destroy the forever.
One filmmaker has always been ahead of his time. From visionary writer and director Francis Ford Coppola comes an event nothing can prepare you for.
Imagine today's society as a branch of civilization about to reach a dead end. Is this way we're living the only one that's available to us? My plan is a city that people can dream about.
Megalopolis.
What about those standing in your way?
Power the people!
You like it the way it is.
People don't need dreams. People need help now. Don't let the now destroy the forever.
We're in need of a great debate about the future!
Enjoy the show.
1, 2, 3, yippee-yay.
There's still so much to accomplish, but is there time? Wait. Go.
Francis Ford Coppola's Megalopolis.
And a lot of people were looking forward to this movie because it was, oh boy, as long as I've known of Coppola, I've known that he's got this movie called Megalopolis that he's been working on. And I know a lot about previous versions of it, but he finally had the technology to be able to do it in a way that he wanted, which was to basically create a huge city and then have a family drama occur in the foreground. So it stars Adam Driver and, of course, several other people. But it's set in what it looks like a version of New York City that also harks back to ancient Rome, if I have it right. So, Evan, how did you stumble upon Megalopolis? I mean, explain, maybe you watch a lot of movies and this is just the next one in line, but explain how you stumbled upon it and then what you liked about it so much that you've seen it several times now. And in the face of a lot of critical reviews of it since the moment it appeared. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always watching movies, and I'm especially interested in anything that feels very current, very boundary pushing, very experimental. So the second I saw the trailer, I was sold. You know, I'm like, Poor Things, Anora, like all of these are, this is what excites me. I love Bardo. I like films that test me a little bit, and I want to see something new. So the moment I saw the trailer, it was high on the list. So I was actually fortunate enough to go like on the Friday of the release. So I wasn't super skewed by the opinions of other people yet. I didn't know. I walked out of the theater thinking that I loved it. And so that's all I knew. And it kind of came as a surprise to me later that everybody didn't. And I loved it so much that I went, twice in opening weekend, because the first time I loved it, but I didn't know what it was yet. And then it was the second time that I was able to kind of formulate more ideas as to what this story is, because I think it's a multi-layered story with a lot going on. I believe that he's trying to give us a new framework to look at now. So he's doing the American experiment as a continuation of the Roman experiment. And our characters are actually these archetypes of the forces at play in the Roman experiment.
Yeah, interesting. And did you followed the plot pretty well, right? It wasn't, for some reason, I get the impression that people think it's hard to follow, but it's pretty clear.
I think it's clear. Yeah, I think there's enough layers that, like, in my like most previous viewing last night, I was pausing it to type out whole things, and Madeline, my partner, and I were just discussing these at length. And it's like a lot of the things, it's like you can understand the story on one level, but it's like the more you understand about the history of philosophy and the history of the world, and you know what it is, what these archetypes represent, the more you get out of the film. And a lot of that isn't my domain of expertise, so it takes learning about other things to learn to appreciate the movie even more.
That's right. And also, since he's been working on this since, I don't know, the 80s, he's brought a whole lifetime of knowledge and special interests to it, and also his movie making experience. And so he's there's a lot going on in this movie that, you know, you got to have some patience being not confused exactly, but maybe not getting the reference immediately. And I don't know if people like to do that anymore. You know, the general public, they like a pretty much more, although on the other hand, they watch all those Marvel movies, and that's like going to Harvard to get a degree in modern mythology or something. You know, you gotta, just to understand the most current one, Captain America Brave New World, you have to have literally seen five previous movies in the series, including one called the Mutants or the I can't remember the title. Anyway, you gotta see like five different movies in three different series to understand why the president of the United States is the Red Hulk, say. Where does that come from? Anyway, but that's a different movie. In this one, what would you maybe give just a really a brief summary of the at least the premise, not the whole plot, and then maybe isolate a couple of scenes that really impressed the heck out of you, and which still do.
I think that the two big thesis of the film, the two points that he's trying to make here, I think the first is the civilization we live in now the only one available to us? And I think he's posing the question that if we can even just ask ourselves that question, that means we're living in a utopia. And it's this idea of an empire falls when people don't believe in it. And we're sort of at this point where a lot of people are talking of the fall of the empire that we live in, and a lot of that. And so I think he's trying to propose, well, is there a vision we have of this working out? And if we can see a vision of this working out, maybe we can shoot for it. So I think that that's one idea that he's presenting. The other big idea that I think he's presenting is that humans are a magnificent creature, or at least we can be, and we have been, and that we don't always talk about that in our day-to-day life, but really we have the potential to dream and to make dreams come true, and we can do things that other species cannot, and we can love and care, and that these things are actually deeply a part of what make us human. And if we can learn to foster that more and to create systems that further that, systems that educate us, keep us healthy, give us longevity and happiness and justice and kindness, you can build a new future where things are even more bountiful.
Well, that's a pretty positive message that he's conveying. And he's also something of a world builder as a director. For example, he built, with the help of the source novel, The Godfather, he built a whole world there of family ties and conflict on a almost Shakespearean level. And then in the Vietnam War movie, Apocalypse Now, he created a whole world there, one that is and isn't the Vietnam War at the same time, but that, which also says a lot about man's warlike tendencies and political manipulations thereof. So what are the what's one of the best scenes in Megalopolis?
It's a great question. I mean, just like as far as scenes that are just really fun to watch, I think about when they're at the Colosseum that's also Madison Square Garden, and Caesar's off a mixture of drugs and he's lost himself and he's getting beaten, but he's so in his own mind, and somehow through this he's still in this place of creating. And there's just so many weird, interesting shots going on where like he's tugging at Julia's like invisible rope. I find that fascinating. All of the sound things are doing weird things. It's flipping upside down. I think that's incredibly watchable. I'm also just like super passionate about design and futurism. So anytime you get these shots of this potential reality at whatever fidelity they're giving you is also just really interesting to me.
Yeah, well, there's a, I don't know if it's a supernatural element, but from the first time that we meet the main character, played by Adam Driver, he steps out off from the top of one of the famous buildings in Manhattan and hovers in the air. It reminds me of the end of the movie, the Peter Sellers movie, his last film, where he plays Chauncey Gardner, where at the very end of the movie, he walks towards the end of a pier and then steps onto the water, which completely undermines everything that you've been thinking about what this character is about. Anyway, so what do you make of his, well, for one thing, how much of this, what I'm calling the supernatural element or physical defiance element in the movie, how important do you think it's to their, to the narrative, but also what do you make of it for the parts that are there, if that question made sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was my big question after the first viewing as well. And so I think what I make of it is that Coppola's given himself permission to like let this take place in myth, even though he is telling a real story that, you know, exists in the same universe as Frank Sinatra, you know, and like Herman Hesse, right? But I think that he's saying that like Caesar represents the artists and the architects, right? He represents progress. And I think that he's saying that people who control progress control time, that 100 years can go by with nothing happening. But all of a sudden, like, you know, when there's a new wave of architecture or a new, you know, when Shakespeare comes along, that's actually what drives things forward. Or when a new material, a groundbreaking material is invented, time has moved forward. So I believe he's saying that artists control time in that way.
Yeah, that's a fascinating take on it, too. On a different thread, did you ever see The Brutalist?
I did.
By some weird coincidence, his 40-year-in-the-making project comes out the same year that this other movie about an architect comes out. And the other one, The Brutalist, wins Oscars and it's really popular, and but also controversial because apparently he used a little AI in composing the screenplay, and it takes on big themes too, not the least of which is the Holocaust and how as an artist he's able to assimilate his experiences of that of World War II and that oppression into certain design elements of the big building that he's making for a rich industrialist. You don't have to talk about it too long, but what do you make of this weird coincidence, and do you see much commonality or connection between the two films, if only by accident?
Yeah, I do think it's interesting. And I did really like The Brutalist, but I do feel like these two films, although the main characters are architects, they couldn't be more different. Mm-hmm. I think The Brutalist is telling a pretty singular story, and I think it's really well done. And I think it's really approachable too in a lot of ways. I think it's similar style of filmmaking as to what we're used to. Uh-huh. And I think Megalopolis, and I think it's probably also the slight downfall of Megalopolis is that it's packing in so much that it doesn't feel like a traditional movie going experience.
Yeah.
And it's more, I think, something to continually watch and pick apart. And so I don't know if Megalopolis even lives in my heart, but I know that Megalopolis lives deeply in my head, and it kind of enlivens my soul. You know,
that's great.
I find it inspiring and exciting. Uh-huh. And I've heard Coppola say that his dream is for everybody to watch this on New Year's with their family once a year, and then just have a discussion about what it is that we're living in and how else could it be. And like, so I view this movie as a tool, whereas I think The Brutalist is a beautiful story.
Yeah, and you're telling the Megalopolis is a lot more ambitious intellectually and historically and emotionally as well. And whereas, as you know, you just said, The Brutalist, it's not a conventional story, but it's easier for people to go with and grasp. Although my issues with the movie are basically character motivation issues. It's not clear to me why some characters suddenly are revealed to be something that we had no idea or clue that they would be like, or why they do certain things that seem self-destructive or just simply unmotivated. But I won't go into detail about that. But in your view, Megalopolis is a really dynamically ambitious. Oops, gotta cut that out later. I lost my train of thought. Anyway, in your view, Megalopolis is a much more ambitious movie, but yet at the same time, almost a classic movie, a movie about the classical world. Am I misinterpreting what you're saying?
Yeah, well, I guess I will say that I feel like the things that I've found other people to find incongruous, or the things that I haven't been able to understand immediately, the more I look at it, the more I actually find it to be beautiful choices.
Mm.
And so I am kind of curious, what are some of those examples, if we have time, that kind of didn't hit for you?
Oh, in Megalopolis or in Brutalist? Yeah.
Oh, Megalopolis.
I'll tell you what the movie reminded me of, one of Coppola's earlier films called One from the Heart. And it's a love story and partially a musical. It reminds me a lot of Megalopolis because he creates a complete set for a Las Vegas main drag. It's in miniature form. So it creates this blend of fantasia and reality at the same time. And I think I get that same sense from this movie too, as to conduct scenes that have lots of special effects and are sometimes carnival-esque and sometimes tense meetings between people. And I just worry sometimes, am I not getting something here that is should be obvious? For example, how are they all connected with each other? But again, it's a movie you got to see more than once. That's all there is to it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I am curious to see. I mean, it's hard right now because it's hard to find the movie. I had to find like an illegal, you know, torrent that was streamed somewhere to watch it for my third time. But I do think I'm starting to hear little trickles of people being like, wait, I really like that film, or wait, I really want to see that again. And so I think that it'll live at least in the short term as like a cult classic kind of following. And I really wouldn't be too surprised if as time goes on, more and more people start to talk about it fondly. And I would even go further to say that I could totally see books being written on this and classes being taught, that like definitely, there's so much to unpack, and it's such a good framework to put other existing ideas in that I think it's going to continue to live. And so it's it didn't get its recognition at the Oscars, but I think it'll be fun to see where it fits into time.
I know I read a lot of film magazines, which is to say three. There used to be 15, but now we're down to about three. Uh-huh. They came out regularly, and I did not read much about Megalopolis except when it was just coming out. What I'm waiting for is some really detailed essay that tries to do what you're describing, which is to go through and kind of sort it out for the viewer, but without spoiling its emotional and intellectual effect, if that makes sense. You know, I think it would be helpful if it was, in a sense, annotated based not only on other things that he said in interviews, but also from his earlier films. And I know when he first started, it was unofficially a adaptation of the German author Goethe's elective affinities, which is a biological term, but in the case that Goethe's using it, it is about people being attracted to each other, and it's about two couples who get all mixed up in their relationships with each other. I'm not sure just how much he did with that in the story. I'd have to, you know, read the book again or read a summary of it somewhere, like on Wikipedia. But when he was originally going to do Megalopolis, he was going to set it in Japan. And I've always had this theory that he probably talked about this project amongst his family members for so long that his daughter, Sophia, just gave up and said, "Oh, like, I'll just do it." And so she did Lost in Translation, set in a Japan of high rises that bears some interesting resemblances to Megalopolis, or vice versa. Anyway, that was something I thought of at the time when Lost in Translation first came out, because everybody was aware that he had this Megalopolis project that he was working on. Anyway, so any other thoughts? Is there another scene that really appeals to you or seems to be so evocative that you can't get it out of your head?
I think one scene that comes to mind for me now is when Caesar and his wife Julia are sitting in their new home. Uh-huh. And he's with her parents. Mm. And the home is like flower petal walls, and so the sunlight is like passed through that, and you can see that her father, the mayor that kind of represents government, he still sees her as this little girl, and he still hates Caesar because his blind spot, even though he loves his daughter and he trusts his judgment, he can't see Caesar for what he's truly trying to do, because he's afraid of change. He likes respect, and so he's afraid of change. And so he calls him out for misquoting Marcus Aurelius. And his daughter kind of like does the correct telling of that quote, which is something along the lines of, what is the initial one? Oh, it's that a leader is not supposed to look at the imaginary future of perfect beings. A leader is supposed to do the best that they can do with what they have at that time. And that's sort of the tension. And that does make a good leader, but that makes a bad inventor. Yeah. And so neither of them should be each other. But then she also goes on to tell him two more Marcus Aurelius quotes. And one is about that the goal of life is to not be on the side of the majority, and that actually like we need to like fight for what we love. Mm. And so I just love to see all of these people's blind spots and all of their motivations and the way that these things bump into each other. You know, because I think this movie is pretty honest about showing what the downsides are. We're like the Caesar inventor that, you uh-huh. know, I quite love. He is such an optimist that he's not in the physical world. So when a child comes up to him, he's so happy to sign this child's book that uh-huh. he doesn't realize it's like a child soldier trying to shoot him in the head, you know? And so I just think it's fun to find all of their blind spots.
Yeah.
And Coppola's very forward about putting those in there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the Marcus Aurelius quotes and the conflict that they represent in visions is pretty much the heart of the film, but mm-hmm. it's more than just that. There's so many other facets to it. It's amazing. Well, I'm assuming that you'll watch it again.
Oh, again and again. I guess one last thing I would like to highlight for some people is to just, I find it fascinating to watch the ways that the manner of speaking evolves. So like when we first see Caesar, he's walking like a vampire with this cape mm-hmm. over his head. Uh-huh. He pulls out and it's all Shakespeare. And as things evolve through time, I think we actually see the influences of all of the creators through history.
Oh. Yeah.
And the same with like the books, the literature that's around, and even the technology. The paparazzi at the beginning has flash bulbs, but then towards the end, it's the digital cameras.
Yeah.
And even like the renderings, you're seeing these very like 50s style renderings of the future in like a Robert Lowry type pan with businessmen in suits. Mm-hmm. And it goes from like a vignette to like a black and white vignette to like a sepia tone into like renderings that we have like now. And so I just think it's, I really do think it's telling a story of one specific time, but it's also telling a story of the whole scope of this, and that each character is more than just one character.
Exactly. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Go
ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say that in the same way that Megalon is just this kind of MacGuffin for invention.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, that's a really good point. Well, this has been a fascinating conversation. I've gotten a lot out of it. Is there anything that's coming up that you're really interested in seeing or anticipate having a depth like Megalopolis?
Well, I'll say I'm going to be first in line at Mickey 17. I'm knocking down the door.
Okay. That's great. All right. Well, maybe we'll talk about that in some future episode. But we've been talking to Evan Wilson about Megalopolis, and he's provided some real motivation for some of our cable listeners to try to give it a chance, even though it's going to be a little bit hard to find. So it's been great talking to you, and let's do it again sometime in the very near future.
Thank you so much, Doug. I love this. I would love to do it again.
Yeah, thank you. I owe you more thanks than Is that a sentence in English? Anyway, thanks a lot, Evan. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
Okay. I'm now going to stop the recording.
Oh, and don't forget, folks, we're in the middle of our No Frills, All Thrills membership drive here at Community Radio KBOO Portland. We are asking you to go to kboo.fm/ATNF4, and you can find out some special programming that we've got, but also how you can become a member and help keep a community radio going. So do it today. Go to kboo.fm/ATNF4. Back what you believe in.
Thanks for listening to Community Radio KBOO Portland. Film at 11 will be back next week. So until then, keep watching the screens.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom. It was the age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief. It was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light. It was the season of darkness.